Hey, what's up, everybody? Trying something new here. I'm trying to use my Chromebook to do this, so I hope it's coming through, and I hope everybody's doing all right. Hope you can hear me. I'm gonna give it just a second, make sure everything's connected right. Get my notes together. I said I was going live in 15 minutes, so I'm a little bit early. I hope everybody will forgive me. I've been, I lost my voice for about the 2 weeks, so it's finally starting to come back. Where I work at is extraordinarily loud, and every time I'd start getting my voice back, I would have to go back to work, and I would have to yell at people and whatnot, and I kept losing it. So I'll be drinking a lot while I'm going through this, but I'm not drinking beer yet. That'll be later. So I want to get started. Welcome everybody. This is going to be an explosive episode. I'm dragging some stuff out. I see some people are watching. I don't know who you are. I can't. Hey, what's up, Michael? So everything's working. Can you hear me good? Because I'm trying. Got a new setup here. I just want to make sure everything's coming through. So I'll go ahead and get started. I'm going to assume you can hear me. excuse me. So just to get started with the questions, first one I got. Cool. Thanks, man. Thanks. The best new movie I saw in 2017. I don't know if that means like wasn't a sequel or something like that. I didn't know what you meant by that, but I talked about Brawl and Cell Block 99. The last time I did this, which I thought was a great throwback film to like the 70s movies, where it would be like a tough guy that like played by a guy that is not traditionally a tough guy. But I would have to say like the two of the best movies I saw, I kind of had trouble narrowing it down. One was Logan, cause I'm such a fan of the Wolverine character and always have been a fan of Wolverine. I mean, he and the Punisher were always my two favorite characters. So to see that awesome Logan movie, forgetting that it was a comic book film, it was just an incredible movie. The relationship between him and Professor X, I thought that was awesome. With the young girl, X-23, was cool. And then War for the Planet of the Apes, where, spoiler alert, I hope that I don't ruin it for anybody, but the three movie story arc of the Caesar character, where you, like, it's a CGI chimpanzee, but like by the end of the third movie, he almost would have you in tears just to watch the trajectory of his life. And like, we saw him grow from, you know, from a baby, from a little chimpanzee all the way up to learning to speak and learning to do all these things. And then, you know, leading an army, and it's just, those like, and the, even like the past 15 years have been three of my favorite movies. So I would go with those two. Another question I had was an underrated dude from the 80s that I really enjoy watching. And it's almost, the answer to that is always Buddy Landell. I thought he cut great promos. He had a unique elbow drop. Nobody else ever that I know of dropped that twisting elbow drop the way that Buddy Landell dropped. And every time I see Buddy Landell on something, I'll stop and watch it. I watched the shoot interviews. I love Buddy Landell. I love his I love his promos. It was interesting. I was listening back yesterday to the Dusty Rhodes, the three-episode Dusty Rhodes deal that we did. And Buddy Landell passed away right around the same time as Dusty Rhodes. And I'd forgot about that until I listened to the episode. And I, if you go back and hear it, you'll hear me doing my Buddy Landell impersonation that, you know, that I can't do now because I've lost my voice. But when he would just say, you know, he'd go off and then, that's right, I said it. And it's just a shame that, by his own admission, this is not me speculating, like he talked about it himself, like he just couldn't control himself. And you know, they did the little deal with Ric Flair where it was just kind of going to be a throwaway match, something for Flair to do. And the match was so good that they decided to use Buddy and we're going to put the TV title on him. And he got in a hotel room and holed up, and he was late for the TV tapings that day, and Dusty Rhodes fired him. And he ruined, every time he would get an opportunity, he's the one that would ruin it. I'm not knocking him. This is what he says. So you can, you know, take that for what it is. He knows. He knows himself, and he knows that he couldn't control himself. And, but I just love the guy. His promos were great. His elbow drop was great. The gimmick was great. You know, it's an awesome gimmick anyway, but to do the gimmick in Ric Flair in the same company as Ric Flair and for everybody to know that you're not as good as Flair, but even though you potentially could be as good as Flair, it's just a great gimmick. He's a great hand. I loved watching Buddy Landell. What movie? The difference, I think, Hofer, with him and Marty Jannetty was there's some guys, I think Cesaro, I think, is a good example of this. They're just missing like this one component or maybe two components that would make them a great singles guy. But for some reason, when you put them in a tag team with somebody, you know, it kind of covers that up. And I think Marty Jannetty was that guy. I think Jannetty was good, but he was never as good as he was when he was teamed up with Shawn Michaels. And he was never as good when he was working against anybody as he was when he was working against Shawn Michaels. A lot of wasted potential with Jannetty too, but I think even more so. But I think Buddy Landell could have been a world champion, and I don't think Marty Jannetty would have been. It's just my take. It's just my opinion. What movie from childhood do I identify the most with personally and why? And I would say Stand By Me. I know most people probably say The Goonies and all that, but that's not real. But like Stand By Me is real. Where you have a group of friends when you're a kid, and usually you grow up and you don't see him again, and you kind of hear little stories about him here and there. I mean, there's a guy, one of my best friends growing up, who lived 5 minutes from me. Like for a while, he lived about five houses down. And the only time we ever talked was if one of us happened to be riding by and the other guy was in his front yard. And now I see him even less. Like I'll pass him maybe at the grocery store or something like that. And that's once a year. And we talk for 10 minutes and that's it. And I just think, you want to see a dead body. I think that Stand By Me was real, man. I think that was a great coming of age story. I never had friends like the friends I had when I was 12, but do any of us. So that's the movie that I always think of when it represents childhood. And I did that a lot. Like the conversations between the kids were authentic. We still, as grownups, have those conversations. You know, what kind of candy, if you can only eat one candy, you know, what candy would you eat from now on? And just sitting around a campfire and eating s'mores. And I did a lot of that stuff. What finish would I like to see make a comeback? I think if a company took a guy, or took the whole company actually, and issued a decree that for the next year and a half, nobody's going to use a DDT. in any form, in any variation. I don't want to see anybody doing a front face lock and dropping somebody on their head. Nobody for a year and a half. Nobody does a DDT. And if anybody does a DDT, you fire them and they never work for you again. And you wait a year and a half, 2 years, and then you bring a guy out and he drops somebody on his gourd in a big match and uses the DDT, it'll put that finish back up. If WWE did that, you could get a headlock over like that. If nobody used a headlock for 2 years, and then you take a guy like Braun Strowman and you give him the headlock as a finish, people believe he was crushing somebody's skull. So if you do that with a move that's as good and as cool that everybody loves and everybody pops for, like the DDT, then when somebody does it, it will matter. And I think you can get that finish back over that way. And the ones that I would get rid of were any of those ridiculous rock bottoms and – or not rock bottoms, people's stuff. Those are cool moves, don't get me wrong. I think it's good, but I never like to see them used as the actual finish to the match. Not to beat a big name anyway. I mean, if the Rock drops a, you know, the people's elbow on George South. No knock on George South, but I'm using him because he's, as far as a television name that you would recognize as a enhancement talent. Italian Stallion, any of those guys. James Ellsworth, is that his name? James Ellsworth, the guy with no chin. If you want to beat him with the people's elbow, that's cool. But if he'd have beat John Cena with the people's elbow, I don't buy it. I don't like that kind of stuff. I was asked about Jose LeDuc, or Joe LeDuc, I'm sorry. The only thing I really remember about him is the blood oath that he took on Memphis TV, which if you've never seen, is just incredible. An Ellsworth t-shirt. You out of your mind. You think I got an Ellsworth t-shirt. But Joe LeDuc, you know, he did the blood oath, and he actually took the axe and cut his arm and made a blood oath that he would beat Jerry Lawler. He and Jerry Lawler did one of the first TV table spots too, where they did a big deal. I think it was him where they broke Lawler's leg going through a table. But he was like on a lesser level than some of these guys I'm going to mention. He was like an Ox Baker or Abdul the Butcher, Mark Lewin, the Sheik. You saw him in the magazines, and he looked mean, and he looked like he could rip some ass. And, you know, once you saw him, though, you kind of saw him. I mean, and it was like that with Abby and the Sheik and a lot of those guys, and King Curtis. They had that one thing that they did really well. What they did really well, but it didn't hold up to being in a promotion for years and years and years. They were good to bring in and have them jump Jerry Lawler and beat Jerry Lawler up and then have a match that goes to a no contest and have them bust Jerry Lawler open at the end. And then Jerry Lawler finally gets a win over them, but they were not good for business to bring them around and keep them there for years and years and years, which is why those guys traveled, because they knew it and the promoters knew it, that they would travel around. But you saw them in the wrestling magazines, and you'd see those guys like Joe LeDuc, and they would scare you just looking at their pictures, you know, Killer Kyle. And you'd see their pictures, and they look scary, and they look like the kind of guy that would just murder you in your sleep. So when they would come to your area, you would buy a ticket because you'd been following their exploits in wrestling magazine. And then you would see them and you would realize they were a lot more sizzle than they were steak. And then they would leave, but they would pop the territory a little bit. They would get some eyes on the product, get some eyes on things. My time in Greer for a Southern Championship, I don't have any particularly good stories. I worked with a guy named Mike Cannon. I remember him. He was really good. He looked not as big, but he looked a lot like Scott Steiner. And I had a couple of matches with him. I always wrestled tag team pretty much, but I did a few singles matches, and then one was with him. And I remember I did the cactus elbow on the floor and dropped the cactus elbow. I couldn't imagine doing something stupid like that now. yeah, you know, had good matches with him. So there's a guy named Steve Stampede. We did a they were doing a gauntlet thing one night where they wanted him to beat a couple of guys in a row, like fairly quick. And I was just there hanging out. And they asked if I'd go out in my street clothes and get beat. And at first I said no. I mean, I just – like I'm not going to go out there and get beat in, you know, 30 seconds for nothing, just to get him over. I wasn't going to do that. But not that I didn't like him, but, you know, anybody that's done it will tell you, you got to protect yourself. So we just negotiated, and I said, hey, I won't be the first guy, but I'm more than happy to be the guy before the guy you're actually going to have the match with. And I don't have a problem with us brawling for 2 or 3 minutes and me kicking your ass, and then you hit me with a schoolboy and me kicking out and kicking your ass again before I leave. So that's what we did. And I also asked, there was the first, one of the younger guys that he beat first in like 30 seconds was still laid out at ringside. So I picked that kid up and beat him up back to the locker room, just so I, cause I wasn't going to kill myself in 30 seconds for that. And anybody that has done this will tell you, you got to protect yourself like that. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not real. I didn't mind getting beat, but I wasn't going to get beat in 30 seconds for nothing. So you made me look like a badass for 5 minutes, and I got beat, but I'm the one that looked like the badass, and I softened him up for the guy he actually had the match with. That's really it, man. It wasn't. I remember there's a guy, I'm sure some of these guys may know him. His name was Johnny Love. Johnny Castro was his name. They called him Johnny Love, and he always reminded me of George Jefferson. And I went to I remember he invited me. They were having a party at their house, and they invited me to the party, and they wanted me, but they didn't want my partner. And I said no. And it was about 6 months later when Tank and I both went in. But I was just not willing to at that time. I knew that eventually, like, I would, but at the time, I wasn't willing to turn my back on him. But so we waited 6 months, and they brought us in as a tag team anyway. It was no big deal. Definition of strong style. All Japan Pro Wrestling from 1994. Misawa versus Stan Hansen. You can just go, that's my definition of strong style. Hitting hard in safe places. There's a difference between hitting somebody hard in safe places and smacking somebody in the face with a baseball bat because you didn't take time to make sure that you did it right. But you can hit somebody across the back. You can hit somebody across the chest. You can hit a guy in the head if you know how to do it. It's just hitting hard in safe places, man. Fleshy, fatty, thick places. And you can hit somebody as hard as you can if you're hitting them in the back or across the chest, and it hurts, but, you know, it's not doing permanent damage. But you start hitting people around the eye and the mouth and the nose and the ears. And I mean, basically, if you hit somebody above the neck or below the waist, you just got to be careful doing that stuff, man. Well, Boomer, I don't blame you for only going to parties that Bryce doesn't get invited to. I'm like Groucho Marx. I wouldn't want to go to any party where they would invite me to. But Snot Bubble Wrestling, it takes that a little bit further, I guess. Like, it would be Terry Gordy and you know, Stan Hansen and Big Van Vader. When I say Snot Bubble, I remember – if you ever like played football when it was cold and you were outside and that something would happen and it, and every time you would hit each other, it hurt just a little bit more because it was cold. And every once in a while you'd look and a guy would breathe and a big snot bubble would come up on his nose and then he would be breathing with a snot bubble. And I heard Kevin Green say it one time that he liked snot bubble football. And that was what he was talking about. Like that back when it wasn't so polished. When the pads weren't quite so big and when the helmets weren't quite so big and when everything wasn't sanitized, snot bubble wrestling is, a smoky room with, you know, cheese dip in a crock pot served over chips and a big crock pot full of weenies and 6 month old candy bars and Mountain Dews for sale. And somebody's 80-year-old grandma that hates the heels and takes the hat pin and stick. Like, that's snot bubble wrestling, man, when there's dirt on the floor and the canvas has got blood and pus on it. It's a scene that doesn't exist anymore in wrestling, man. That's snot bubble wrestling to me. Three guys I would like to have dinner with and pick their brains on booking a supercard: Eddie Graham, Pat Patterson, and Dusty Rhodes. And Dusty learned most of everything he knew from Eddie Graham, but you're asking me about booking a supercard, so I want Dusty involved because Dusty, I mean, he was arguably the master of booking a supercard. I mean, Vince, he could book a spectacle, but Dusty could put a card together from start to finish. So, you know, and then Pat Patterson, okay, Vince McMahon's a promoter. Vince McMahon's not a booker. The reason that stuff was laid out so well, everything that you remember liking about wrestling was because Pat Patterson put it together, not Vince McMahon. Vince McMahon, hell of a promoter, but Pat Patterson was his booker, and wrestling was better, and WWE was better when Pat Patterson was the one who was booking it. That's just the way it is. So obviously I'd like to talk to Pat Patterson and pick his brain, Dusty Rhodes, and then Eddie Graham. I mean, Eddie Graham taught, if you think almost everybody that went on to book wrestling learned from Eddie Graham. Vince McMahon Sr. called Eddie Graham for advice on booking. And he taught Dusty. He taught Bill Watts. He taught the Funks. He taught everybody. Bill Dundee. Everybody who was anybody who ever booked wrestling pretty much learned from Eddie Graham. That would be the historian Mark. But today, who I would like to talk to is Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks, because they're doing it. And they're trying to draw 10,000 people in a non-WWE event. And if they do it, nobody else has done it since WCW that I know of. And maybe somebody has, and I missed something, but nobody else has drawn 10,000 people. And I always say, if Ring of Honor could, they would. But they may be proving me wrong. they seem to be picking some steam up. And, I mean, I think their numbers are up a good bit in Ring of Honor. So I would love to sit down and talk with Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks and see what they're thinking, man. Like, who are they looking? I mean, they're doing it in Chicago, and I don't know that CM Punk's UFC deal is going to let him do anything, but I could definitely, if it will, I could definitely see him showing up just as a FU to the WWE, you know. ROH is at 5,000 tickets. The ROH may break 10,000 before Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks get to. Said I was just reading about that the other day, that they're starting to draw a lot better. And I hope they prove me wrong. Like, nothing makes me happier than some company to come along and do something different, man. That's why every time there's a change in the TNA thing, I try, if I can, at least if it's on YouTube, I'll try to watch it and just see. Maybe somebody made a difference. Maybe somebody moved a needle. It's a shame that that TNA or Impact or whatever they are, that their biggest segment here recently has been a mistake, that that shouldn't have happened, but it did happen. And for anybody, like, here's the thing. It was set up bad. It was rushed. They should have took their time. I know Boomer and Bryce are here, and they can tell you, like, I know I've heard Heath said, now, I don't know if it's true or not, but Heath has told me that he's seen guys use a chain in a few of their matches. I've never seen it myself. Cause I try to see the best in people, and Heath is always looking for the worst in the Sons of Steel. But I personally try to see the best in people. But let's just say they did use a chain in one of their matches. I would imagine that they would take that chain out and show it to everybody so that they can see them wrap it around their hand. And there's the anticipation of using the chain, and there's making sure that everybody in the crowd sees the chain. And then there's the using the chain. But to me, the deal with Sami Callihan was just rushed. It was done too fast. Like, there should have been an anticipation of him swinging that ball bat, but everything happened so fast. But it was a mistake. I mean, it probably shouldn't happen, but come on, man. Like, you can't demonize some guy because he and another guy agreed to do something and one of them got hurt. There's two people there that agreed to do that. It's not all his fault. And then when it's over, once it is done, why not capitalize on it? It's a bad thing. It shouldn't have happened. It sucks that it did. So let's make some money off of it. At least there's a good thing that happened. So for Sami Callihan, he should go on Twitter and play Ivan Drago and say, if he dies, he dies. That's what he should do. It's what the thing that kills me about wrestling fans is they complain that nobody does that kind of thing anymore. And then when somebody does that kind of thing, they complain that they're doing that kind of thing. You know, it's amazing to me, wrestling fans. I don't know. I don't understand them. They wish that more guys would, if you're going to be a heel, just be a heel 24 hours a day. And then when somebody is, they get mad at them and say they don't have any respect. That's just stupid, man. Something bad happened, make some money off of it. My thoughts on Heath's solo show about South Carolina wrestling. I think it's a great thing. It puts us out there to an entirely different – listen, I bust balls about stuff, and you're always going to hear me talk crap about that. But it opened up avenues and partnerships and friendships with people that wouldn't have been there. It's brought more patrons in. It's brought more people in to our group. It's got us more listeners on our show. It's not something that I care about. That's not a lie. I don't care. It's not something that he and I are ever going to be able to have an intelligent conversation about because he follows it a lot closer than I do. And I'm not kissing anybody's ass. And I'm not saying that he is. But I'm just like, that's how I would feel if I was doing that. I would feel that way. So I don't want to do it. And that's not the only reason. He's just got a different work ethic than I do. So there's no problem. I will say it because he knows it. The only thing I've ever had an issue with was when he was doing those weekly drop kicks. And I've said to him, this is not that I felt like it cannibalized our show a little bit. Because by the time we got together to talk about something, like, it had already kind of been talked about and there was nothing fresh to add to it. So, like, I wasn't a fan of that, but we made some adjustments. And I mean, he's my partner and he's my friend. And if he's got something that he's passionate about and that he loves doing and that he wants to do, then I would support that 100%. So, if he wants to do his own stuff, last I checked, he's a grown man. He can do what he wants to do. You know, it doesn't change the fact that he's my friend. We don't agree on everything. There was a decision made by me at the end of the summer to focus on my real career and make money at that. And he supported that and covered for me. And you've heard shows where, like, Boomer Payne would fill in. Is he really grown though? That's true. That's a good one, man. Is he really grown though? but like where Boomer Payne would fill in for me because I couldn't be there. And he said, hey, man, look, I understand that you don't want to spend – I'm off every other weekend. I don't want to spend every other weekend in the road from sun up. It was sometimes 7 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock in the morning before I would get home with all the setup. And I was like, dude, I'm just off every other Saturday. I don't have every weekend off. And there's other stuff that I want to do. And I stepped away from a lot of it, and he wanted to keep going. And who the hell am I to tell him that he shouldn't go pursue what he wants to do, man? Like, I'm will always have Heath's back 100%, even when we're not agreeing about stuff and we're not on the same page. I will never knock Heath in front of anybody. I'm just not going to do it. Somebody started to knock Heath in front of me one time, and I shut it down, and it's not going to happen. We can joke, and we can play, and we can have fun all that we want to, but he is my best friend, and I'm not going to listen to anybody run him down when they mean it. I'm the only one that gets to run him down anyway. I mean, I talk smack about him all the time, but he knows I love him. So that's the final word. That's all I want to ever talk about. Heath doing his own stuff and whatever. He's a grown man. He can do what he wants to do. but coming up here in a couple of more questions, I'm going to spill the beans on him. All that being said, y'all going to hear some stuff today. And if I don't know who all is watching, but I may invite a few people to join the conversation when we get there. Is Jericho really the greatest of all time? No, he is not. He is not even in the top 25. He's not in the conversation at all. It's a gimmick. He's great. how I feel. Oh, it's ridiculous, man. His shows are stupid. Nobody wants to hear Heath talk about anything. Jericho is really good. Jericho's an incredible promo, and he's an incredible worker. And I like Jericho, and I think, I don't know that anybody has had, this late in their career, a resurgence like he has. And he, to me, he's only drawn money one time. And that was this recent match against Kenny Omega. And my hat's off to those guys. They put together a great angle, a great match, but drawing one show does not the greatest of all time make. I'm a big fan of his. I love what he's doing. But I've noticed he's one of those guys that when people call him the greatest of all time, they always have a list of like 15 greatest of all time. There's only one greatest of all time, and that's Muhammad Ali. He's the greatest of all time. He's not even a wrestler. Muhammad Ali is the greatest sports figure and sports attraction of all time. There's not a debate. Everybody knows it's Muhammad Ali. So there you go. It ain't Chris Jericho. Wrestling related, I'm saying I don't think Jericho's in the top 25. As far as great in the ring, but there's a bunch of guys who are great in the ring. Great on the mic, a lot of guys who have delivered better money promos than Chris Jericho. I'm talking about money promos. I'm not talking about good promos. I'm talking about promos that drew money, that made people want to come see a show. And I don't know that Jericho's done that. I think he's a draw, but I don't think he's as big a draw as a lot of other people. Anyway. That's all I'm going to say about that. Yeah, Bryce, I agree. He's lasted so long. I tell you what's smart about Jericho is just he recognizes what guys used to recognize, and that's I can't miss you if you never go away. So not only does he show up, he has some good matches, he gets some good promos, he works, he kind of does what he wants to do, then he leaves. And he goes and he does something different, and when he comes back, he's not the same anymore. Maybe he's just got a haircut. Maybe he's wearing a different jacket. Maybe he's got a scarf on. He was smart enough to take the list thing run with that. Please don't misunderstand me. I'm not knocking Chris Jericho. I'm a big fan of Chris Jericho. I just don't think he's the greatest of all time. And he knows he's not either. That's the thing. It's a gimmick. Yeah, thanks, Hofer. It's not Heath's time to stand up, Heath, as my nephew likes to tell him. Stand up, Heath. You're going to be able to stand up here in a little bit. If you want, you can join the conversation here in a little bit, because I'm going to be interested when I bring out this juicy piece of information that an anonymous source sent me. I can't wait, personally. My top five all-around workers. This is just me. This is almost it's kind of hard to narrow it down to five. It's really just maybe my top five, just right off the cuff. It took me about 30 seconds to come up with these names. I didn't put a ton of thought into it. It's just the guys who I enjoy watching. Number one, look, it's Ric Flair. Come on. All things considered, his ability in the ring, his promos, his gimmick, his whatever, all that. Come on, Ric Flair. Number two, Terry Funk. Right. See, even you, the big defender of Jericho, knows that he's not the greatest of all time. But these five are. They may be the greatest of all time. Number one, Ric Flair. Number two, Terry Funk, who you're talking about a guy reinventing himself. This is a guy that in four or five generations, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010, and the 2015s, continues to stay relevant. He's retired six times in each decade. You know, he went from being that all-American wrestler to, you know, middle-aged and crazy. And then even before that, the stuff he did with Jerry Lawler in Memphis. And then to really, and those guys who were there, everybody in ECW will tell you that ECW became what it became because Terry Funk elevated it by being there. And then to come into WWF and put a stocking or a pantyhose on his head and call himself Chainsaw Charlie. Come on. We're going to get to a little question about where Chainsaw Charlie came from here in a little bit. So number one, Ric Flair. Number two, Terry Funk. Number three, just the presentation of this guy, Randy Savage. Dude, still to this day, anybody can drop their elbow off the top rope and they can pretend that they're doing, and Bayley can do her thing, and the other girl that's in NXT can do her thing, and CM Punk and Shawn Michaels, as great as he is, they can all try to drop an elbow off the top rope, but nobody dropped an elbow off the top rope. It made it look as easy and as effortless as Randy Savage. And not only did the elbow look effortless, getting to the top rope, he made that look effortless. He made everything he did look easy. And he cut some of the best, ridiculous, out-of-your-mind promos of anybody. He could work babyface. He could work heel. The packaging of him and Elizabeth is the greatest two-person act in wrestling history. I defy you to tell me another two-person manager and a valet and wrestler who can touch Savage and Elizabeth, man. When he used to make her hold the ropes for him, and then he turned babyface and he saved her, and she went to hold the ropes for him, and he said no, and he pulled her back, and he held the ropes for her, where wasn't a dry eye in the house. Go back and watch it at WrestleMania. It's an incredible moment. Number four, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels. If I can only watch one person's matches, they may be Shawn Michaels. It would come down between Shawn Michaels and Terry Funk. If I can only watch one, because Flair, once you've seen it, you know, Flair, Sherry and Doom. I don't think Sherry was with Doom. That was Harlem Heat. Sherry was with Harlem Heat, man. Woman was with Doom. Maybe you know that, and you're just being funny. But Shawn Michaels, I think Shawn Michaels cuts, he cuts better than average promos. I don't know that his promos were ever great, but they were really not bad promos. He never looked like he was stumbling over his words or lost or trying to figure out. He knew who he was. There's a match, and I always tell everybody, if you want to see a great Shawn Michaels match, you go watch the SummerSlam match he had with Rick the Model Martel when they had the stipulation that they couldn't hit each other in the face. And this goes back to the DDT thing. If you, the stipulation is we're not going to hit one another in the face. We both know. I mean, everybody knows that at some point somebody's going to hit somebody in the face. So they do this match. Sherry gets up on the ring apron. Finally, boom, somebody hits somebody in the face, and Sherry faints, and the place goes. That's a great little story to be told in a match. Two arrogant guys that don't want to get hit in the face. Go watch it. It's from SummerSlam. It's the one, I think it's the one in Europe where Bret Hart and Davey Boy Smith had their match. Okay, I'll agree with that, Boomer. I don't disagree with that at all. He got mad. But the same could be said about Austin, and the same could be said about Hulk Hogan. I don't disagree with that. But from bell to bell, he might have been selfish in the locker room. But bell to bell, you're hard-pressed to find matches when he didn't make the other guy, even when he was overdoing it with Hulk Hogan. He still made Hulk Hogan look like a monster. I'm not saying he did. That's why he's not number one. That's why he's at the bottom of my list. But, dude, I still think he's an incredible performer from top to bottom. The presentation, the guy who knew who he was. He's an incredible performer, man. And number five is Bret Hart. And probably I'm not like ranking them one to five here, but just like these are just the guys. If I had to pick five guys, I can only watch their match. follow up on your top five. Do you think there's anyone current that could come close to the top five? So by the end of their career, it's so different. I mean, I think John Cena is a big draw. I think he's a big name. I don't think he touches these guys as far as his in-ring ability. He's nowhere close to any of I was talking about Bret Hart. He's another guy. If I had to pick a guy, I can only watch this guy's matches from now on. Bret Hart's, he's going to be on that list. Hofer, by the way, you giving me all these, give me 25 guys, and then I'm answering your question. You're like, I have more. I know what you're doing. You're not fooling anybody, but I'm not going to let you get to me. You're asking me all these questions where I got to give 15 answers to everything. And then while I'm giving those 15 answers, you want five more. You want me to open up a vein for you here? I'm not stupid. I know what you're doing, but I'm going to answer your little questions because that's who I am. You can't get to me, boss. 12 to 15 guys, if I had to make a card. This is another one from Michael Hofer. If I had to pick a card with 12 to 15 guys, who would I pick? So, I'm going to run down. First of all, those five I just mentioned, Flair, Funk, Savage, HBK, Bret Hart, Stan Hansen, Nick Bockwinkel, Harley Race, Bruiser Brody, Hulk Hogan, Steve Austin, and The Rock. All draws. All great. So then I realized I had them written out, six and six out beside each other. So I just took the two names that I had beside each other and let that decide what the matches would be. So we had Ric Flair versus Nick Bockwinkel, Terry Funk versus Harley Race, Randy Savage versus Bruiser Brody, Shawn Michaels versus Hulk Hogan, Bret Hart versus Steve Austin, Stan Hansen versus The Rock. And now you tell me, I take those six matches, I put it anywhere in the world, and I can sell 10,000 tickets. I promise you that. I could probably sell 100,000 tickets to see Stan Hansen versus The Rock. Come on. That's my match right there. I made a card and didn't even try out of your little questions about 12 to 15 people. So I made a whole card out of it. Wasn't even trying to. They just happened to match up side by side. Had a bunch of dream matches on there. Five movies you can't wait to see. I'd pay Mayweather. See, I'm telling you, man. that's a big time card right there, man. And then you ask me what five movies I couldn't wait to see. So I think I answered a question kind of like this last time. So I tried to pick different movies with the exception of number one, which is Halloween, because I love wrestling. I mean, I love horror movies. And they're rebooting Halloween, forgetting that's what killed Dennis Day. I've had contempt for Michael Hofer since the day I met him. Hey, Hofer, send me a text message, by the way. I want to help your kid out. see, you're my see, I was going to tell you to do something. Now you're asking me my 35 favorite ice cream flavors. Send me a text message with the links where I could buy one of those hats. I want to help your kid out because you do a lot to help us. So send it to me. It may be a few weeks, but if you're still selling them, I'll buy a few from it. And if you want to post a link here in the in this group, send it to me or Heath. We'll post it for you. Five movies I can't wait to see. Halloween, number two, this is going to surprise everybody, but it may not. If you listen and you know me, I tell people at work, they'll say that the look on my face a lot of times, I look like a serial killer or that I'm plotting, you know. And I say, what you guys don't understand is the only thing I'm planning is what I'm going to do when I get to Disney World. I'm thinking about how many times I'm going to try to ride Haunted Mansion and how many times I'm going to ride Peter Pan. And it's a small world. And am I going to be able to do everything at Epcot? That's what I'm thinking about most of the time. I spend most of my year planning that trip. So number two is The Lion King, because I love The Lion King, man. I love the animated version. And the reason I love it is because when my nephew lived with us when he was a baby, we watched it over and over. I bet we watched that movie every day for 3 years. So if I never see it again, the animated one, I'm all right. But I do love that movie. And I loved The Jungle Book when it came out, the live action version. So I'm interested to see how they do The Lion King. Number three is The Predator, written by the author of the original Predator movie, Shane Black. I do hate personal interaction. This is true. But I'm looking forward to seeing The Predator. Another is The Irishman, which I'm so happy that Netflix bought the rights to, because it's Martin Scorsese's new film that's bringing him back to that familiar territory of the crime drama. And it's pairing up Pacino and De Niro, who I'm huge fans of. And they had that movie together, Righteous Kill. And I went and saw it because I was so excited. These guys are finally going to share some screen time. And it kind of blew, man. It was not great. And then Godzilla versus King Kong. I love King Kong because it's my grandfather's favorite movie. And I watched it with him when I was a kid. And I just love King Kong. I mean, he holds a special place in my heart because it reminds me of my grandfather. And Godzilla, he loved the Godzilla movies too. So I watched a lot of movies with my grandpa growing up, and those were always like in heavy rotation. Those and Clint Eastwood and Charles Bronson and John Wayne. Like, I love all those guys for that reason. And then the new, I think I said it last time, the new Equalizer movie, I'm looking forward to. Leatherface made the successful transition from the big screen to the ring. What other horror movie icon could make that same transition? That is where the Chainsaw Charlie gimmick came from, was was it Corporal Kirshner, I think, was Leatherface. And Terry Funk thought it was cool and even wanted to use a chainsaw. I learned that from Something to Wrestle With the other day. But there were a couple. I think Jason, they had a Jason the Terrible, and I think they did a Freddy in that same promotion. And then, you know, ECW had that zombie. And then speaking of zombies, The Undertaker was a zombie. And they had the vampire in Gangrel. But I would say, like, if I had to pick one guy that I think, one horror icon, actually I got two, one for male, one for female, one horror icon that I think could make the successful transition, it would be the Pinhead character. You would obviously have to take that out, but if you kept everything else the same with the European cut jackets that flared out at the bottom and the pale skin and the bald head, and the way he spoke and the things that he said, I think that's money. Like, I really think that Pinhead character, the Yeti, I forgot about the Yeti and the Loch Ness. And then, they had Loch Ness, who was Giant Haystacks, who actually was a big name in Great Britain wrestling, played the Loch Ness monster. And John Tenta was the shark from Jaws. I mean, everybody's actually been a good mayor. The Zodiac, you know, obviously based on the Zodiac Killer. Legion of Doom thing, man, was kind of horror related, even though it was campy. So I had those guys, and then I had Baby Firefly from The Devil's Rejects, the female character that Sherry Moon Zombie played. I think that could be a successful gimmick for a female wrestler. My top five favorite entrance themes and why. It ain't good enough just to answer these questions, is it? I got to say why. And do I have any music on my playlist? So I had five Demolition song. The reason why on all of these is most of them are heavy driving. They're rock and roll, which I like. They tell the story of who the person is. And that's a thing. Like, it's part of the presentation. It's not just this generic song. When you hear the song, it matches the personality of who they are. And number one is Demolition. You know, we're Demolition, Walking Disasters. The Stone Cold Steve Austin song. I mean, if you've never been in an arena when Steve Austin music, when his music hits and that glass breaks and the people stand up, if he's ever around, you need to go. Because it'll bring goosebumps up. The way the crowd pops when that glass breaks. I mean, it's incredible. Number three is The Ultimate Warrior. I loved his song. Same reason. It just matched who he was, man. He was unhinged. He come flying to the ring. His matches lasted 30 seconds. It was over, just like the song. Number four, Real American. Hulk Hogan song, I'm a Real American, Fight for the Right of Every Man. Maybe wind up not being true, but still, it's a cool song, and it told the story of who the Hulkster was. And probably my favorite, really, is the Bad Street USA song, which is the only song that I have on my phone. And I listened to it today. It just happened to play randomly. I just love the Bad Street USA tune. I think it's a badass song. And I bought it because they released it. Michael Hayes released it on iTunes about a year ago. And I got like a $12 credit on iTunes. It's been sitting there for 5 years. So every once in a while, some song like that will drop and I'll buy it. Somebody gave me a gift card, and I'm just not big into it. I listen to my records on vinyl. But that kind of made me think about the use of music in wrestling. And I don't know that a company ever did that better than ECW. When I think back, like two things specifically. Number one was New Jack, when Natural Born Killers would play. And they would just blare it, the whole song. He would hit the ring, he'd beat somebody up, and the song, if you've never heard the song, it's this brutal, hard-driving hip-hop song by Dr. Dre and Ice Cube. And the lyrics are just... I can't, you'd have to hear it. Like, you go search for Natural Born Killers and hear New Jack song, and it would play over his whole match. It was great. It was incredible the use of that music to get him over. And they did that with everybody. Like, everybody's song was like this really popular song. But then at the first pay-per-view, and this just ruins it for me on the WWE network. It just doesn't work as well. When Terry Funk came to the ring for that last rodeo and they played Desperado by the Eagles. When I used to watch that, dude, it would just raise the goose pimples up on you, man. Him coming out to Desperado. So yeah, I saw ECW did incredible use. I was asked to rebook the Sons of Steel. It's one of those things that I want to do it, but I don't want to do it because there's some stuff there that I think could be used. And if I put it out there, then people will know about it and they would be expecting it. But I still think some of it could work. Let me think about it and I'll answer it next time. Cause I would want to talk to Bryce and Boomer about some of it. Cause I just think some of it they could still do and it would work. But just so you know, I had three count book through 2019. And I'll give you a little hint about some of it, leaving those guys out. You may notice that I'm freshly shaved. That was because I grew my hair out long and my beard out for almost 2 years so it could get shaved at a show. And a lot of that got derailed. But I will say that I had intended for the Sons of Steel to leave and come back with me. And that the people that I had been aligned with, that we would have done a lot of reversing with J.C. Harper and Austin Jordan, where I'd been with J.C. Harper, and he would have thought that the Sons of Steel were coming back to help him, and Ken Magnum was coming in to help him, when actually we would have beat him up, and Austin Jordan would have joined. And they would have thought that I was trying to take the company over. And then it would be revealed at Country Santa Clash 2019 that it was actually Heath that was trying to take the company over, where we would, and I wanted to invent a new match. Everybody does war games and anybody can do war games. I didn't want to do war games, but I did want to have two factions and I wanted to invent a match. My own match that I created. I was working on it. I still hadn't got it yet, but I'll get there, where two factions could face each other for control of the company and that my faction would win, because that never happens. The good guys always win. I wanted the heels to win, and I wanted it to be revealed that Heath was actually the mastermind behind, because Heath is so lovable and he's so friendly and everybody likes Heath. But he could play this heel wonderfully, and that we would all have been doing his bidding the entire time. And then we would have gotten to 2020 Country Santa Clash before they actually got control of the company back. So that was the plan. That was what I wanted to do. But other people didn't necessarily see it that way. Now, the moment we've all been waiting for. I received an anonymous email the other day. Heath, are you watching? I hope you are. That's right, the baby-faced assassin. So I hope that Heath is watching. He says he wants to. It is anonymous. It's anonymous. I don't know where it came from. I cannot, as you are prone to say, Heath, I can't reveal my sources. I can't tell you where I heard this. So I can't reveal my sources to you. But it read, you were made aware on a past show about a long-standing feud in a discreet promotion a few months ago. The promotion was RMS, Riverside Make-Believe Stampede. And the years were 86 and 87 inclusive. It involved a conniving mastermind named Heath Beef Flair and an unsung underdog named Scotty Rhodes. Heath Flair constantly charged his entourage, known as the Four Horsemen of Cary Blanchard, Brad Windham, and Romel Anderson. I'm saying some of these names have been changed so that we can't get sued. With the systematic destruction of Scotty Rhodes, several beatdowns occurred between class sessions, and Scott Rhodes was forced to fight back the only way his underdeveloped frame could manage. He was Scott Rhodes. I remember him. He was a bit underdeveloped. He wrote an open pro Commissioner Pringle overseer of the English district within the Riverside, or RMS, broad territory of discipline. This protest detailed with great passionate prose the levels of humanity with which Heath Flair and his denizens of destruction would ooze to terrorize those standing in their path. Much social scorn was weaved into this fable of desperate fabrication, and the fallout of it, of its implosion soon landed within earshot of Heath's mentor and protector, Mama Dillon. Well, Mama Dillon was within many circles of RMS hierarchy and was shocked and insulted at what accusations and scorn had befallen her chosen one. She sought out the removal of Scotty Rhodes from all territories that RMS presided and insisted he be shamed and seek penance for his action. Mr. Rhodes' only saving grace was to beg and plead with Commissioner Pringle, stating that hard times bent his psyche to perform such frowned upon actions. Despite the urgings of Mama Dillon, Commissioner Pringle ruled that Mr. Rhodes could issue a statement of retraction and all would be forgiven so long as no further tarnish to Mr. Flair's reputation be voiced. My question is, how would you have booked the blow off and who would you be rooting for? Well, anonymous emailer, whoever you may be, if you may be watching, if somehow this finds its way to him, first of all, let me say I had no idea that. Obviously, we changed some other people's names, but Heath Flair clearly is intended to be Heath Mulligan. And it's my understanding that there was a classmate, and Heath is always, speaking of diminutive frames, Heath has never been the largest of men. Now, he's gotten fat over the years, so he's gotten wide, but he's never gotten any taller. So he did have to surround himself with some other guys who were, let's face it, equally awful. None of the four of you guys could pass. So it took all four of you ganging up on somebody to be able to do it. And Scotty Rhodes, to my understanding, wrote a nice rap song where he detailed his issues with Heath. And I don't know what all was said. I'd love to find a copy of that and hear it. And then Heath's mama got involved. And if you know Heath's mama, I'm scared that she's going to hear this. Because if she even hears me talking about this, she's going to be mad at me. Because Heath's mama loves her some Heath, boy. And Heath can do no wrong. And his mom, Mama Dillon is what we called her. I can say it. That was talking about Mama Mulligan. All right. So that's the thing, man. Heath bullied poor Scotty Rhodes. And he had his friends bully Scotty Rhodes. And Scotty Rhodes stood up for himself the only way he knew how. He cut a passionate promo. And he tried to point out where things had been done wrong, where he'd been put down, where he'd been trounced upon. And Heath's mama got involved. That's sad. At least Scotty, at least he fought his own battles. He didn't have to have his. I bet you his mama didn't write his rap song. I'm wondering, Heath, do you have a rebuttal? Oh, Heath, you can say you don't remember. Your mama got involved in everything. I bet you your mama's told you three things last week to do. Tell me, at some point last week, your mama told you something to do one time. The what I'm dragging out of the closet here is that Heath Mulligan, you, my friend, are a mama's boy. And Scotty Rhodes, oh, it wasn't a rap. Your sources tell you, Scott Hicks, it was not a rap song. It was an essay on character traits. Well, if your source happens to have a copy of that essay on character traits, then I would love to share it on the next episode of Carrie's Corner. Because I think our fans deserve to know what kind of person they're dealing with when they're dealing with that mama's boy, Heath Mulligan. And I would have had it in a steel cage match. And had I known at the time what was going on, not only would I have put Scotty Rhodes and Heath Mulligan in a steel cage where the Four Horsemen couldn't have got involved, well, Mark Brody would have been the special enforcer to make sure that he stood up for you. Nothing happened. That's how I'd book that. And that's going to end Carrie's Corner for today. I'm going to go see if I can find me a copy of that essay on character traits. And if I can, I'll be sharing it next time. Until then, I'll see you later.